Can't stop dancing. Feeling the music, feeling the funk. ABA night.
You're listening to the Locked On Nuggets podcast, your daily podcast on the Denver Nuggets. Now, here is your host from DenverStiffs.com, Adam Mades.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to Locked On Nuggets podcast, part of the Locked On NBA Network. I'm your host, Adam Mades from DenverStiffs.com. The largest ever Nuggets blog and community on the web. Check us out. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. This is a two-part episode. Really, it's just one episode. You don't have to search for part two. But I'm going to do a quick recap of this Denver-Oklahoma City game because I know you guys like to kind of see the notes from the game. And then after that, it's going to be the summit where I bring in Christopher Dempsey and Fred Katz. So I'm going to try to do both for you. This is going to be a really, really quick, maybe like five-minute recap of the game because I think it was a big one. Nuggets get the win, 102-94 over the Oklahoma City Thunder. This is the biggest win of the year, I think, easily, hands down. People today, the media were at the game tonight were kind of talking, was this the biggest win of the Michael Malone era? And I personally think it probably was. You know, they had the last year you had the Cleveland game, which Cleveland, you know, that was a big win. The crowd was really into it. Golden State, you know, the Golden State game felt more almost like a fluke. Not really a fluke, but just, you know, there was no pressure or whatever. This one, I thought there was some pressure to this game, I felt like that Denver could have gone one of two ways in this one, and not only did they win the game, but they won it with a fourth quarter run, and that's just so big for Denver. That's you know, to enter the fourth quarter tied and then to get the better of a team that has a lot of closers, I just think that was really, really important. I'm going to start with my notes today. Emmanuel Mudiay, I have to give him huge props. Huge props. Just a phenomenal game. MVP of the game, I think, no question about it. And Will Barton, you know, had some nice things. Mason Plumlee, I thought, was just incredible. The bench, really, as a whole, was incredible. But Emmanuel Mudiay tonight looked like he looked like I don't even know the right adjective to use. He looked phenomenal. And he really, not just phenomenal in the game, but phenomenal down the stretch. 21 points, 7 rebounds, 5 assists. He was a plus 17, 8 of 10 from the field. And, you know, some of this was some hot 3-point shooting, 4 of 4 from behind the line. He shot the ball with confidence. I think the best thing you could say about him tonight was he just looked like the most confident guy on the court, which is amazing considering the talent that was on the court. And is kind of amazing considering some of the ups and downs that he's been through. He has been the MVP now of two games, I think the Atlanta game and then this game. And that really says a lot, I think, just about him and the potential that he has. Everybody knows I'm as hard on Mudiay as most analysts. And, you know, I don't think my opinion changes dramatically after one game, but I have to just give him so much credit because the potential for him, I think, the reason people, I think, still hold out so much hope for him is because of the potential that he has and some of the things that he does that, you know, I don't think there's a whole lot of players that can do it, you know, at his age. Tonight was one of those nights where the good Mudiay was there for most of it and bad Mudiay, you know, wasn't around at all, and I thought it was great. Now, I have to say, fans probably don't know this. Emmanuel Mudiay didn't talk to the media after the game. He ducked out super quick. Again, as Michael Malone usually takes about 10 minutes from the final horn to when he addresses the media, Emmanuel Mudiay was out in that stretch. He left the arena. And he has actually done this every single game throughout the year. I don't know if it's been brought up on the show or not. He hasn't really talked to the media. I talked to him at training camp. But he hasn't really addressed the media so far this year, at least to my knowledge. Maybe somebody has gotten him one on one or this or that, but he, for whatever reason. So tonight, unfortunately, we really don't have any quotes from him. But I thought this might have been, if not his best game as a pro, certainly up there in the top five or so games, and it was just really, really cool to see. I think As I said in a previous show, I think the flashes of good Moutier have been more frequent this season than any of the previous two. And I think if you are a Moutier optimist, you kind of have to be encouraged by this first 11 or 12 games. Even though he's had a couple of real, real bad games, I think they have been far less frequent, and that potential, those flashes of brilliance really shine through. Another thing I want to get to, Malone really shortened the rotation tonight. You know, Millsap played 40 minutes. Gary Harris played 36. Jokic played 28, but foul trouble was part of the reason why it was so low. I think this team is just better when the rotation gets smaller. And that's to Coach Malone's credit, I thought this year, you know, I've seen people complain about the rotation on Twitter and different platforms. I actually think Malone's rotations have been pretty good this year. More often than not, I've agreed with some of the bigger rotational in-game rotations. Everybody knows I like Fareed, but especially with Jokic. But just kind of, that, as I've said, I think that train has sailed. But tonight, you know, you have a short rotation. Beasley played 6 minutes. Really, outside of that, it was just 8 guys. And I think that helped. I think that was a big part of why Denver was so good, even in the second half and down the stretch, is he was able to ride. Malone was able to kind of ride guys and let them kind of get some continuity and get really just kind of get used to the floor. And so I thought that was kind of a big storyline tonight. I think that signals that, A, the team is kind of rested because they've only played one game now, I think, in five days, and have the day off tomorrow, no practice. So I think that played into it a little bit. But I also think Malone knew this was an important game, and he kind of knows the pecking order on this team. You know, there's Paul Millsap, who's always going to play. You know, Wilson Chandler, Gary Harris, Nikola Jokic, always going to play. Will Barton. And then you got the two point guards, and he kind of lets whoever is having the better night go. And tonight, that was clearly Emmanuel Moutier. And so I think that's kind of something that I don't think the team had last year, with so much of a clear, established who are the guys that are always going to play X amount of minutes, and then who are the guys that, you know, are the first cut if you're trying to shorten. But I think the shortened rotation just is a real positive for this team. Lastly, I have to mention this, and I wrote a thing on DenverStiffs.com. If you want to go and take a look, I highly recommend it so you can hear the whole audio. But Jokic, after the game, had a really, really interesting comment. He really stressed, and this was unprovoked. You can hear the whole circumstance of it. He said, as a group, we're getting better. I mean, I like this team, to be honest. We as a team play really good and go out like a team, And he was going out of his way to kind of say how much he enjoys the group and, like, trusts the group. And I don't think that's necessarily a contrast to any given team or anything like that. But I've been harping on, I thought the body language from him was bad in that Sacramento game. But immediately after that, and especially on the road in Atlanta and in Charlotte, I thought that him in particular, but the team as a whole, had really been together and cohesive. And that has extended all the way to this home stretch. And I just think that's such an encouraging thing that he went so far out of his way to say it. And that, you know, guys, even like Paul Millsap the other day had a lot of really positive things to say about the team and a lot of the players. I just think that the team is in a healthy spot. I still think their offense is like miles away from where it needs to be and what it will be. But I think that when you think, will the team get there, you have to be encouraged because of quotes like Nikola's tonight and quotes like Millsap's the other day. So even though I think the team has a long way to go offensively and they still look clunky, I just am so encouraged by the camaraderie and sort of positive energy that's coming out of the team. So let's take a quick break. And then when I get back, the Summit episode, where I've got a really, really fun discussion along with two terrific writers, some of the best NBA writers out there.
Welcome back to the show, the roundtable, the summit edition that I'm doing on Fridays. Roundtable, where I bring in my own big three, and I have assembled a big three tonight. And the funk music, it's ABA night here at Pepsi Center. We're recording this on Thursday before the game, so all of our takes are not going to have the benefit of knowing what happened in this Thunder Nuggets game, but that's okay. To introduce my big three, seated to my right, from the Norman Transcript, also the host of Thunder After Dark, which is the only adults-only clothing-optional Thunder podcast on the web, and the OKC Dream Team podcast. It's Fred Katz.
I've never done an episode of Thunder After Dark and Clothes, and nobody knows. Also, I appreciate you pulling a Derrick Rose and just including yourself as part of the big three.
Okay. This is a super team, right? This is clearly better than the Dream Team, even. No, Fred's one of my favorite follows, you guys. He covers the Thunder beat, but he's hilarious. You're also, and I have to say this, your first team, I listen to you when you're on guests on other shows as well as your own, your first team all podcast chit-chat. You know the the awkward 3 minutes of which we are in right now. You're always amazing, so there's a lot of pressure on you now.
We're getting so meta right now, talking about awkward podcast chit-chat to start a podcast on the awkward podcast chit-chat.
Exactly.
To start a podcast.
This is very meta. Seated to my left, also a charmer. And I think the godfather of all Nuggets reporter, the one guy everybody looks up to here in Denver, from Nuggets.com, Altitude.com. You've seen him on TV. You've heard him on the radio. Chris Dempsey.
Hi, y'all. I don't have anything witty to say, but I am very happy to be here with you guys.
You know, you're known as Christopher. Don't call me Chris Dempsey,
yeah.
Except for your name tag says Chris Dempsey.
Right, so
I'm confused.
I can't get anybody to just put Christopher on everything. Actually, the story, it was a weird story how it became Christopher in first place, because when I was still at the Denver Post, it was Chris for the longest time. They changed the way we file stories in the software, and they just inputted everybody's bylines into the new software. And mine came out Christopher Dempsey, which they apologized up one sign. We're so sorry, we'll change it. And I said, well, my name is Christopher, so it's fine. And that's how I became Christopher, and then I became Christopher, don't call me Chris Dempsey.
Christopher's so formal.
They haven't gotten the message at KC or Altitude.
Yeah, Chris works.
Yeah.
You're a Chris.
It fits on the name badge.
Although you are a Frederick, I feel. Is that right?
My legal name is not Fred.
Okay.
My legal name is Matthew.
Oh, you have a stage name.
Yeah.
This is
a stage name. Fred was what people just started calling me when I was really young, and then it just kind of stuck, and everyone was calling me Fred.
That's funny.
I wish I would have done this, honestly. I wish I would have gone with a nom de plume when I started writing, when I started blogging, because I don't like I don't want to be known. I want to be people to be read, but I don't want to be known.
Yeah, my dad was a DJ, a radio DJ, and he went by a completely different name as well.
Smart.
He just didn't want people to know what his name was, but yeah. I mean, it's funny how all that kind of works. That's an interesting.
Your dad is Daft Punk.
Yeah.
Smart. This was good. This was like B+ chit chat. Good job, Fred, for carrying.
Okay. I'll take the B+.
Yeah,
I'm better than I did in school. So
I'm an F- chit chatter. So you really pulled up the big three. Now let's get into some Nuggets news, because my first thing, we're playing the Thunder tonight. Like I said, we were not going to know how this game went, but that's okay. But Fred, catch us up on the Thunder season so far. What's going on in the early stages? What's some of the trends with this team so far?
It's been weird. It's just been weird. Like, they've lost a lot of close games. They've had five games within 2 points with four or fewer minutes to go, and they've lost all five of them.
Hmm.
Which, it's weird, because you look at them and they're 4-6 going into this game, and I don't want to be too specific. Like, I don't want to be too specific in previewing this game, since people are going to be listening to it mostly after, I guess. But you know, two of those losses go another way, and they're 6-4 instead of 4-6. Hmm. And even if they're playing the exact same way, the optics on 6-4 are just, they're totally different. So I think that's one way to look at it. But the offense has been weird. They're 22nd in offensive efficiency, which is just crazy with this talent that they could be, or at least they were going into last, and I forgot to check this morning what they were because I don't do my job. But it's amazing that they could be so low with so much talent. They're playing really good defense. They switch a ton. They cut off a ton of passing lanes. Paul George has been great defensively. Adams has been really good. But watching the offense, I mean, there's no ball movement, not a lot of player movement. It's just been strange early.
Is that a surprise, though, that there's not a lot of ball movement? I know it's a cliche to say that about a Russell Westbrook team, Carmelo team, but, I mean, they're isolation guys, and I even think at their best there's not going to be a lot of ball movement.
No, it's not a surprise, but I am surprised by the lack of player movement. Paul George is so smooth off the ball. He's so good at running off those pin downs. I mean, it's the way – it's why so many people, myself included, thought, of all the top 15 players in the league, save for maybe Anthony Davis, he's the perfect styled one to be next to Westbrook, because he's so dominant when he doesn't have the ball. And like in that Sacramento game the other night, he just wasn't really running off screens all that often. He almost looked, he just looked uncomfortable in terms of moving off the ball. And I think that's the thing they need to put into their offense. Because you're right, like Russell Westbrook is never going to have like it's never going to be a Warriors like ball movement offense. That's never going to be the case. But I didn't expect it to be kind of this extreme in terms of the lack of player movement that's complementing it.
What have you thought of them so far? How much have you gotten to watch them? I'm still like, there's still some teams I haven't watched, but OKC's one. What do you think of them so far, Chris?
I when I watch them, I'm not surprised defensively that they're as good as they are. I mean, I don't think you can put, Paul George, Andre Robertson, Steven Adams. Like you have these guys who individually are really good defensive players, and you put them all on one team with the length and their ability to their athleticism. I think defensively is what I'm completely – that's exactly what I thought they might be. Offensively, I mean, it is what it is. I mean, you know, when you get those kind of guys there, you're going to have to work that system out. And just a ton of pick and roll. They have all kinds. It's funny because it seems to me that they're trying to make sure that everybody gets enough shots, but it almost comes down to court and it's like, all right, it's your turn. Now it's your turn. And then what it looks like over the course of a whole game is just like a lot of standing around while this guy takes his turn to shoot. So all the shooting numbers or the shots attempted and those kinds of things are very similar, but it's not within a flow. It just kind of I think they'll be okay.
Right.
I think as Fred said, they're not going to be the Warriors, but they can get movement, and I think they will.
It's kind of like I feel like Denver's this way too, where there's a lot of guys, a lot of nice guys that are trying to be like very democratic and like, no, we want everybody to touch the ball. And it's like, you ever walk into a place where two people come to the door at the same time? You're like, no, you first. And it's like an uncomfortable 4 seconds. That's how I feel like the Nuggets offense has been so far, and perhaps also Oklahoma City, where it's like, I could probably score the right thing, but I want to get you a touch here and get you comfortable.
Well, and in the Nuggets sense, it's just because everybody really – they just don't have an alpha.
Yeah.
And so – and when your best player, Nikola Jokic, is also maybe your most unselfish player, then there you go. You're going to have a team that really likes to move the ball. And they admitted freely earlier on that they were overpassing in a lot of situations. So, listen, I think for them, they feel like it's better this than the alternative. They would rather have movement, ball movement, player movement, and maybe overpass on some situations than kind of stagnant offense and guys kind of just going for there. So it's an interesting kind of dynamic.
So let me ask you guys a question, because last year they were the number one ranked offense after Christmas in the NBA.
Mm-hmm.
And this year they're somewhere around the middle of the pack. Again, I didn't check numbers. I can generalize and say somewhere in the middle of the pack. They obviously changed a little bit. They added Millsap, but they have more talent. I mean, I didn't think they'd be the number one offense. I thought the Warriors would be the number one offense. Shocking, I know. But like, I did think they were going to be top five, and I picked them to finish fifth in the West because I thought their offense was just going to be overpoweringly amazing, and Millsap and Jokic just totally make sense to me as a pairing. Do you think last year how good they were in those final 4 months, do you think that was a fluke? Do you think
that's a good question.
I don't think you think that this is what they are. I assume we all think they're a better offense than this.
Right.
But do you think last year where it shows like this can literally be the best offense in the NBA, was that a fluke? Or can they actually be like a top two offense?
I didn't think it was a fluke once I saw it for like a third straight month.
Yeah.
Because
we're talking about like 60 games.
Yeah.
It wasn't Linsanity.
Right. Yeah, right.
That was
right,
like right. A really long streak, but it was like 8 games.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree with that. I thought over the course of it just is who they became. And, you know, the offense this year, when you – the Paul Millsap and Nikola Jokic dynamic is just the one thing that's really kind of making things a little – getting a gray area muddy a little bit. And then I think also Jamal Murray at the point guard, just because he doesn't quite understand what he's doing from possession to possession. Should he be shooting? Should he be running? Or should he be in the corner? When those things kind of get themselves ironed out, and I think we've seen flashes of that. I mean, their offense has been putting up some. I thought they didn't have a great offensive game Thursday. So on Tuesday, and they still ended up well over 100 points. And so I think they're going to get back in that space. It just is, it's a mini Oklahoma City, right? So Oklahoma's got these star players. the Nuggets are just kind of integrating new players, and it just is taking time.
So does Jamal Murray just need to be watching, like, offensive film on, like, Malcolm Brogdon and Patrick Beverley all day? Like, Patrick Beverley Rockets, not Patrick Beverley.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen. That's, like, who he is. But I think I'm with Dempsey in that I'm not really concerned about their offense just yet at all, just because I always thought this was going to be the case, that you have two really unique players that I think both want to make it work, and Millsap and Jokic, but it's not they both have to do something slightly different than what they did last year. And so I think they're going to figure it out. I don't think last year was a fluke at all. They played teams that were like preseason talking before the game talking all about how they're going to stop them. They'd go out and score. I mean, the Warriors.
Yep.
They'd go out and put 120 on the Warriors. The Spurs, same stuff. So I think they just have to get back to it. I will say the lack of small ball is a real thing. Last year, being able to go to Wilson and Gallinari at the 3-4 with Jokic really opened up the court, and that was some of their best lineups. They don't have that, and they don't really have anybody at the moment. You know, Wilson can play the 4, but then who's the 3? Is it Barton? He's right. Kind of, you know. So I think there are some things, but I've always said November 20th. It's just an arbitrary date, but I think that's what.
Well, that's what Wancho was supposed to kind of help with, right? Yes. So if you had Wancho, then you can. It makes more sense with Wancho and Wilson or so whatever else to have that stretch for in that position.
But on the topic, and I'll start with you on this one, Dems. On the topic of these, both of these teams have new pieces and they have to figure it out. Which team do you think is going to figure it out first? And kind of hit their stride, maybe not peak, because everybody's going to peak at the end of the year.
The Nuggets and Thunder?
The Nuggets and Thunder. Which team do you think will kind of, like, really start to get rolling
first?
Well,
I think the Nuggets will, but only because most of those guys have already played in this system. So, I mean, you're adding one guy from the outside, and that's Paul Millsap. And, yes, there are new starters, Wilson Chandler and Jamal Murray, but they played in the system before. So, yeah. I mean, it's just kind of a matter of getting, finding the flow with the one new guy rather than – you know, Paul George coming in and then Carmelo Anthony coming at the last possible second. And, you know, now you have to figure everything out from there. So,
yeah, I think the difference, too, is that, like, I mean, you kind of alluded to it. Like, for the Nuggets, it's new players entering the same system. For the Thunder, it's new players entering a new system for everyone. So even, like, someone like Steven Adams, who was around, or Andre Robertson, who was around, or Abrines or Grant, like Russell Westbrook, like, those guys are returning, but they still have to learn a new system. Even Billy Donovan has to learn a new system. Both sides of the ball, too. Like, they were playing totally differently defensively. Last year, Steven Adams would often level to the screens. Sometimes he would drop back on pick-and-roll coverage. This year, there's tons of switching. Like, they try to switch 1-4, but they're even more willing to switch with Adams. Like, Adams was switching onto Damian Lillard. They didn't want to switch 1-5 against Portland on Sunday, but, like, he was still switching onto Damian Lillard a decent amount because they were just kind of just lazily relenting on those switches. And I don't think that's what they want to do. But they're far more switch happy this year because of the personnel they have. They're a lot more aggressive in passing lanes than they were. Mm-hmm. It's a very different defensive style than they were playing. And granted, the defense has looked quite
great.
Yeah. It's really good across the board in, like, every metric you go by. Like, even if you break it down to just, like, you go on synergy, you look at what plays that end in pick and rolls, like, not even pick and roll shooter, like, any play that ends on any sort of pick and roll passing out, they're giving up, like, 0.85 points per possession on those, which
crazy.
Is third in the NBA. Like, crazy good numbers across the board on defense. They're, like, top five by any metric you look at, which is great. But, you know, I don't think they've clicked in some ways defensively, because, like, there are times where you see them switch and it's like, you could have fought so much harder on that. But they're going into the mentality either
switch,
you know, Russell,
everything.
Well, yeah, either part of it, I think, is that, like, they know we're switching everything, so we have to switch, and they're learning how to deal with that. I also think part of it is that, like, Russell Westbrook doesn't like to fight through screens, and so mm-hmm. that it's just easier to switch early. But, like, I also just think part of it is, like, they need to realize, okay, here's when we actually do switch, here's when it's worth fighting through, and they're getting those moments too. So I don't think they're close to their peak defensively. I just think there's so much defensive talent, and I think Billy Donovan's a very good defensive coach, so it's happening like this, but I think they can be even better than they are right now.
It's weird to think of this much scoring talent and be like, yeah, it's a defensive team. Because you're talking about three of the best individual scorers in the NBA. And you're right, though. Like, I thought even going into the season, it's just having the guys that height with that length that are also that quick. Because so much of the NBA now is being spread out in the pick and roll, having to, like, collapse. This is why Denver's giving up so many three-pointers in the corners. They have to rotate and stop the roll, then close out. And guys like Gary Harris and Jamal Murray have just, like, some physical limitations that Paul George doesn't, because he's 6'10" and super athletic.
Well, plus the Nuggets are loading so much to whatever ball side is that you just hit the nail and then just hit opposite, and that guy's wide open all night long. And that's just the way it's going to be. You know, we've heard Michael Malone allude to this a little bit and say, hey, you know, there's some three-pointers we're just going to give up. They're going to give up those threes all season long because of what they want to do ball side.
helps to have Steven Adams too.
Yeah,
he Steven Adams is awesome.
He's gotten so good.
Yeah,
like he's a better pick and roll defender this year than he was last
year. Crazy.
He's certainly a better rim protector. Like he has gotten so good at verticality and even catching up to guys on pick and roll who might get around him and being able to alter their shot even from behind, like do those blocks that like Giannis and Porzingis can do because their arms are like never ending. Like Adams has gotten really good at that too, just altering those shots. So he's like become, I think, one truly one of the like a top tier defensive center in the NBA now.
Real quickly, and you can change it up. You don't have to stick to your preseason prediction, but where do both of these teams finish in the Western Conference?
I actually had Oklahoma City. What did I have them? I had them second.
But what do you have now? I know it's only three weeks in.
I really liked them. I think I was. I don't know. I can't. I was going to say I was one of the few. I really liked the addition of Carmelo Anthony, and I just thought that it would eventually work itself out to a situation where defensively, I mean, and what Fred just described as a team that's this good already, that can even get better, that's crazy.
Yeah.
So if they figure out anything out offensively, you're talking about a team that's going to win a lot and be such a hard out in the playoffs. I had them high regardless. I'm not wavering off of that. In terms of the Nuggets, I just had them somewhere 6, 7, 8. And I'm not wavering off of that.
I love his pick. So he has the Thunder 1, 2, 3, or 4. He's
no,
got
no,
the Nuggets 5, 6, 7.
I didn't have one. We have Golden State as one.
All righty.
And then
it's still
then,
a soft prediction, Deb. So I'm going to be honest.
2, 3 for the Thunder.
So I have both these teams somewhere between 1 and 15.
So bold.
Yeah. I had the Thunder second preseason. I still think they're going to be in the same place in terms of their quality. Like I agree with you. I think they're just too talented for me to think they're not going to figure it out. And I expected them to struggle. I didn't expect them to struggle this much offensively, but I did expect them to have ugly performances and that kind of stuff. And I still think maybe they're third now instead of second because Houston's got some games on them.
Yeah,
and Houston's really good. And but, you know, they've also got the Chris Paul injury. So maybe they have a couple of games that they drop, which they wouldn't have had if Chris Paul were around too. Maybe I've got them third, but I still think they're going to be in really good shape heading into the postseason. I'm a big believer. I know there are situations where this isn't always true, you know, Dwight Howard Lakers or whatnot, but I'm a big believer that when there's loads of talent and that talent wants to make it work, and like it's not working because they don't want to make it work.
Right.
Like Carmelo Anthony always talks about it, and I wouldn't go this far, but Melo does. He always talks about it. He thinks they're being too unselfish. And I don't think that's the case, but I don't think it's because I think he's just kind of miswording it.
Right.
Like what he means is like they really want to make it work. And so they're saying like, okay, now I'm going to let you shoot now.
Right.
But the whole point of this is not like it's not to distribute shots. Like it's not. So you look at the end of the box score at the end of the night. It's like, okay, they all took the same amount of shots. They should be distributing shots evenly, but in a fluid and, you know, game dependent manner. You know, they should be playing to the possession. They should be playing to the defense. And they should be playing to where they find space and all of that.
And it looks like they're playing to the stat sheet. And that's what I was trying to say earlier. It was just like you look at the stat sheet and you go, okay, well, this guy needs three more shots. It's your turn down. And you can't play like that.
Right. No, you can't. But I will say, like, if you're going to be totally optimistic, if I'm going to be like the Homer Oklahoma City media, then the one thing that you can take away from that is, like, if it's going to fail early,
right.
I think it's definitely more encouraging for it to fail early because they're playing to the stat sheet
right.
than
yeah,
because they're
true.
Playing for themselves.
Yeah, that's very true.
Yeah. Good point.
Like, if you're that good and you really want to make it work, you'll probably figure out a way to make it work at some point.
Yeah.
I don't know how long it takes, but you'll probably figure out. If you're just like, I'm Carmelo Anthony and I'm going to get my 18 shots, then you may not make it work.
Right. And the tough part for Oklahoma right now is that they've taken some losses while learning.
Yeah.
And it's just like you kind of opened up by saying this, you know, if they're 6-4, the optics are way different. If they win a couple of these close games that they have lost while you're learning, then it just makes everything better on the backside. But now it's kind of, all right, the wins have to catch up, plus your play has to catch up. And that's kind of, it's a weirder space to be in.
right, it is ABA night here. We do have, in honor of ABA night at Pepsi Center, we have a brand new Doug Moe shirt on DenverStiffs.com. You got to check out. $25. It's a ringer. It's very vintage looking. I think it's by far the coolest shirt we've come up with. So if you're interested, check us out on DenverStiffs.com. And then there's 80s night coming up in January. So I think we're going to try to do a big like Stiffs meetup thing with everybody doing rocking their Doug Moe stuff. And in honor of that, I have a couple fun ones for you guys real quick. The ABA is obviously before, I think, all of our times. But it still kind of has this cool, like, legacy. My favorite part is the team names. They always had some, like, ridiculous team names, and I'm a big fan of like, obscure mascots. What's your favorite ABA team or team name? And if you need a list, I can read you off some of the best. I'm going to read you off. I've saved mine, so I'm not going to give you mine.
Yeah.
But you have the Anaheim Amigos, the Spirits of St. Louis, the Miami Floridians, the New York Americans, the Pittsburgh Pipers.
Spirits of St. Spirits.
That's well, like classic.
Plus, I have family in St. Louis and everything as well. But I just, I like that name. That's it captures.
What did it mean?
Well, you know, Bob Costas was the play-by-play guy for that team.
Really?
Yeah.
That's awesome. That. Mm-hmm. I did not know that, but yeah. It makes a lot of sense. But yeah,
seems
no,
I'm so much older than him, but I guess not.
The ABA, you know, just the legacy of the league and what it contributed and how it impacted the NBA.
Yeah.
I hope it never fades. I hope there's people who always understand what that league was about and the style, the players that came from one league to the next, because it was significant. And there's a lot of what we see in the NBA, a lot of what turned out to be had its roots in that league, not in this one.
The Anaheim Amigos is
it's too good, right?
It's easily the best. And the reason why it's the best is because every single sports team tries to make their team something intimidating. The Bears. Yes. It's like, we're just the friends. We're your friends.
This is why I love it. Yeah. I'm so like, the Nuggets the Bears is an ABA vicious team, yeah. And it's yeah. an ABA yeah. name, and people are like, well, exactly. what's a Nugget? I'm like, it's a cool icon of like Denver history. That's why it's great. I don't care if we're not like manly.
Everything is so, they're Warriors, yeah. or they're yeah. Lions.
The Lions yeah. of Detroit.
Like, Falcons. Yeah. And then we're just your friends.
We're just your friends.
We're just here to really hang out and support you throughout 48 minutes. It's a plan.
That's true. If you ask to move, we're there, like right away, yeah. all day long, up to the third floor. We're getting that furniture.
It's great. The friends are amazing.
The San Diego Conquistadors, I think, is also mm-hmm. that's my favorite one, which
that
I think is
good.
I don't know if it could pass today, but it's to me it's it's also intimidating, but right. also weird, you know.
Yeah.
So I'm with it. That's it to our ABA section. I want to know on the beat, and this is I prepped you for this before the show, but Fred, covering Oklahoma City, has, you know, for people that don't know, Russell Westbrook can be he's kind of notorious for being one of the more difficult guys to interview because he doesn't provide a lot of insight and stuff, and sometimes can be downright tough. But there's a lot of NBA players, not just Russ. There's a lot of players that kind of have that approach, and I feel NBA players on the whole have. Not all of them, I have to make clear, but some high-profile ones seem to have a disdain for the media. And my question is, because you guys have covered, you guys are on the beat, you guys are actually covering these guys much more than I am in terms of, like, day-to-day interacting with the players. Why do they hate the media? And this is a broad question. Why do they hate the media?
Well, have you met me?
Yeah, exactly.
That's all you need to know. I don't know. I mean, some of them have had bad past experiences.
Mm-hmm. Right.
We certainly live in an environment today where it's socially acceptable to hate the media to an irrational degree.
Right.
Can't imagine who started that. And then I think sometimes if you try to talk it out rationally with a player, like I've had, Chris, I'm sure you've probably at some point had conversations like this with guys, like off the record to the side conversations where a guy is difficult and you kind of approach him and you're like, so what's the issue? Did I do something? And they're like, no, man, I don't like talking to you guys. I don't like dealing with this, whatever it is. And so we kind of just have like an off the record conversation about it. And it turns out like he doesn't like the blowhards who are going to scream and rip him. And I say this to him in those situations. I say this to anybody who says this to me. And this is the complete God's honest truth. It's like, I promise you, I hate those guys more than you do.
Yeah. Right.
Because they create these situations for me. When I'm just trying to ask you honest and respectful questions. And when I say that, I think guys are sometimes like, oh, that's Angel, I never thought about it like that. That's interesting. Sometimes it warms up. I think for the most part, you can have, like, almost no one is difficult to a degree that it inhibits me from doing my job. Like, yeah, there's really only, like, there's one guy in the Thunder who's right. that. And there are some guys who, like, they don't love doing media, but they're still respectful and personable, and they're good people. So it's fine. Like, it's not their favorite thing, so they deal with it. Yeah. But I think, like, I don't think there's a blanket way to approach it. It just kind of depends
Correct.
On yeah. the person. You know?
Yeah. No, I agree wholeheartedly. I think just my experience over the years, it seemed like when I first got into this business, it seemed like guys who didn't like talking in the media had experiences to back that up. So they were burned on one occasion or multiple occasions, however many times it took for them to start to hate the media. Whereas I just think their players are coming up now just not wanting to talk to the media. Like, it's not that they've ever been burned. And probably in a lot of these cases, they've been like all the high school All-Americans and then college All-Americans. And so nothing but great stuff has ever been written or said about them. But they still, it's just one of those things, like, not going to talk to you guys.
Right.
And I've seen that more and more. And that's too bad because, you know, it's still, even with social media, even with Players Tribune and all these other outlets that they can have to tell their stories, still the day-to-day how a fan gets to know you is through the Norman Transcript, is through the Denver Post,
right.
is through the, you know what I'm saying? And so, listen, it's, I understand, but it's too bad because, and then I think the other thing is that there's so much media.
Yeah.
There's so many more people now at practices and games. I think some of the players are just like, whoa, I mean, you know, let's just keep everybody at arm's length. And so there's just, I think it's a complicated answer that I don't see the situation getting any better over the years. I think it just continues to be a little bit more of a arm's reach situation.
I realize that I'm like biased toward media, obviously, but right. like the players that I have, it sounds so intuitive, but like the players that I have the best interviews with and that I have the best relationships with are the ones who I'm able to form
100%. Yeah,
you know, like mm-hmm. like for example, a guy like Steven Adams, who's just the nicest person anyone would want to cover and is extremely personable and this low maintenance personality and is just very respectful to everyone, whether it's someone who works for the team, a security guard who works outside, someone in the media, whatever it is. He's always going to be respectful because that's just who Steven is. And like Steven allows me to have that relationship with him. He allows me to get to know him a little bit, just kind of know who he is, what his makeup is. And I do the same with him. Mm-hmm. And I think once people kind of see that you're a person too, they Correct. Feel more comfortable opening up to you. Like just talking to someone in a scrum, that's not having a relationship. Like that's you holding
right.
a recorder.
Correct.
Like the way that you get the good answers in the scrums is by showing people like, hey, I'm a person too
right.
in the non-scrum situations, in the situations where like things that we learn, things that we can't talk about on this podcast or have conversations that like not even like nefarious things, like
right.
not Thunder After Dark things, but just like things that we, because they're said explicitly off the record, we just, no matter what they are, they can be just what the guy had for breakfast them in the morning.
Right.
Like we can't talk about it. And because you have those relationships, people kind of know where you're coming from in questions and they feel more comfortable and they give better answers when they actually are on the record.
And it's just harder to do now because as a matter of fact, we get a lot of national media here to Denver now. And we talked about this. National media comes to Denver because they know that in instances like teams like the Thunder or the Golden State Warriors or the Cleveland Cavaliers, they can get more one-on-one access or they can get closer to the players here because there's not as much media than they ever could if they flew to either one of
right.
those cities. And when you can't do that, like I remember years ago going to an LA Lakers practice when there was still Kobe and Shaq, and I couldn't even believe how many people were in that gym. There's not a chance that you're going to ever get to a relationship with Kobe Bryant
right.
or a relationship with Shaquille O'Neal or whoever the star player is. And that comes back and hurts in the end because they don't trust you because they don't know you.
Right.
And it's and so it just is difficult in a lot in different circumstances to even get to the one-on-ones to be able to get to know these players. But when you can, it's The benefits are endless.
I always say this is why I'm not a beat reporter, because it's a skill, being able to break down that wall and to have those personal interactions. And it's one of the things that I'm actually not that great at. But I do find it interesting, because I've heard some of the young players say, oh, even on this team, oh, so-and-so the vet, he's really taught me a lot of things, like never talk to the media. I'm like, right. Man, like, I don't think that's a good lesson there.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that makes it a lot tougher for you even. But I also get it. This isn't a complaint at the players, because I completely get it. Like, even here in Denver, we have the hot take artists that show up from, you know, every 30 days or so and write that this guy's garbage piece. And so I think that becomes representative of the whole media.
Oh, I understand the frustration. Yeah. I completely understand the frustration.
Yep.
It's I totally get it. Like, I look at my Twitter, like, I hate everyone on Twitter, even though, like, there are probably a lot of people on Twitter who I shouldn't hate.
Yeah.
But I hate, like, Chris, because you could tweet at me, I'd be like, oh, my God, I hate that guy. Just because you're on Twitter. And it's like, because I will tweet something, and like I'll tweet some Russell Westbrook quote where Russ gave a one word answer. And then people will be like today when I asked Russ, like, what'd you do on your off day? And he said, told me to mind my own business. And I tweeted it out. And then people were like, well, you shouldn't be provoking him with such disrespectful questions. Like, how is your day is legitimately referred to as a pleasantry.
Right.
That is
right.
The technical
right.
term for that.
It's literally the second thing is, hey, how was your day today?
Yeah, that's
are you not.
Crying?
Yeah, so I'm like, I get that, and I'm like, oh my God, I hate everyone on Twitter. So I actually understand how, like, people saying things to you in a situation where you don't want it could make you hate everyone of that ilk, because I hate millions of people who I've never met before just because of a social media account they have.
All right.
But, like, at the same time, I think it's different. Like, again, I'm biased because I'm a beat reporter, but I do think it's a little, like, we have it differently, Chris. Like, when you're on the beat, like, it's just different because you get the opportunity to know guys. Like, on the road is
on the
just better.
Oh, so much better. So much better.
And that's when things can open up, like, when you're on the road and you just, like, have, like, one 3-minute conversation with, like, Ray Felton.
Yep.
Ray Felton used the term OGs 17 times, which he did. He used OGs 11 times in a 4-minute interview, and it was my favorite thing ever. Like, Ray Felton does that, and it's like, now I'm like, oh, Ray Felton, what a great guy. And now
what
Ray
an
Felton
OG.
Says hi to me every time he sees me, and we talk, and, like, he's great. And it's like that. You have that moment on the road, and it opens.
Yeah, no,
opens
you're up, absolutely right about that. Road games, road shoot-arounds, those are by far the best times to just sit down with a player. And you know, the other thing, and this is kind of almost shop talk, but if every single time you're talking to a player, it's with a recorder.
Yeah.
You understand what I'm saying? So sometimes you just have to just put that down and sit down next to a guy and just say, hey, what's going on? How was your day?
Half of my one-on-one interviews with players are without my phone for that very reason.
Yeah.
And part of it is because it helps me be more disarming for whatever reason. I get the voice. I get the interview voice. Like, I have my voice right now. And then, like, if I just talk to you with a recorder, it'd be... So Fred, like, you know, like, it just becomes a different person.
You know who the most difficult person to ask how your day was, though? It's not Russell Westbrook.
Who?
It's Kyle Singler.
Because
Kyle Singler is the most existential human being
ever
lived. It's like he got like a B- in freshman philosophy and was like, I'm gonna take this the rest of my life. So, like, no joke. I mean, I love Kyle, man. He is funny, but he's not trying to be funny in these moments. He knows he cracks me up too. But so I sat down. And he, like, gave me five, and he said hi to me, and I sat down next to him. I said, hey, man, how you been? And he just takes this deep breath and looks in the air, and he goes, well, how do you want me to be like? I was like, I'm going to kill you, man. I can't have a normal conversation with
you. You're like, that's good. That's enough. That's fine.
We'll stop right there.
Yeah. I was like, I can't do this, Kyle.
That's funny.
I can't do this, man. He cracks me up.
I'm going to start answering like that whenever you're in town.
Every time, it's the best. He's got his signature. He just writes his name, like, in print is his signature. And I was like, Kyle, we gotta talk about your signature, man. Like, we gotta talk about it. And he's like, what's wrong with it? And he said, it's like, it's in print. You don't sign it. Every other athlete in the history of any sports league just, like, writes a first initial and then scribbles. And he says, so I was like, why in the world do you do that? And he said, I think you're asking the wrong question. I think the real question is, how did we come to a place in society where it's acceptable for people to sign their names like that so illegibly?
He's
I
now
love
like,
Kyle
I was like,
I
love him or
I
hate
love
him.
No,
I love him. He's like the greatest person.
I'm interviewing him.
He's
I'm
great.
Doing it
He's like really
as
phenomenal.
Possible.
He's phenomenal.
PR's going to be like, really? Is that who you
that's
want?
Who
the
you
guest
want?
Guy.
Yeah,
I, please.
Guy.
I need to ask him at the game.
Yeah, he's great.
This is the last one. We'll get out of here. But he's in town. Carmelo Anthony. and I've never asked you this, Dempsey, on the record or off, so I'm kind of curious. What is his legacy in Denver? What's his legacy going to be here in Denver?
Well, what his legacy should be in Denver is, listen, he is the player that put this franchise on a national map.
Yep.
He is that guy. Because even when the Nuggets were good in the 80s, they were this is like a flyover city, blah, blah, blah. You know, those they play that crazy style of basketball where they run up and down the court and whatever.
Yeah.
And then they got terrible after the Dikembe Mutombo,
right.
You know, Seattle Supersonics deal. They got terrible for years. And Carmelo Anthony, what Carmelo Anthony did was not only bring a star player to this market, but all of a sudden, like, Carmelo Anthony jerseys, you could watch TV and you right. saw a Nuggets jersey. You watch a music video and his name is in the songs, and it was just kind of
cool.
They became at least known and like yeah. you know recognized as a basketball team in this league, something that you might want to pay attention to. And then the team started to win a ton of games, and then they went to the Western Conference Finals. And I just think none of that is possible without that guy. And so I would hope that his legacy. I think it's been it's a fun question for people to ask around here. Well, should the Nuggets retire Carmelo Anthony's jersey? They should retire his jersey.
No question about it.
Here and no. So,
but let me ask you a question on that.
Yep.
Because Nikola Jokic also wears number 15.
I know.
So what happens if Jokic is in the prime of his career and has had a better career?
That's why they will not retire Carmelo Anthony's
jersey.
No,
retire him. But the Yankees have the same thing, man.
Really?
Yep. The Yankees had Bill Dickey wore number 8, and then Bill Dickey retired, and they just gave it to an up-and-coming rookie named Yogi Berra, and they have number 8 retired twice.
Twice, yeah.
I'm not surprised that you have baseball facts. You seem like a guy that would have,
love
like,
baseball.
Do you have a bunch of facts? Like,
are
you okay?
I'm a huge baseball fan.
What do you think, as an outsider, what is your impression of Carmelo and the Denver Nuggets? Like, what do you think of when you think of Melo era Nuggets?
I think they should retire his jersey.
Like, I don't think this is a question. I was kind of surprised you phrased it as like they should. I just assumed they would.
Yeah.
No,
I think it's the same thing as Durant with OKC.
Yeah.
Like retire his jersey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's history, right? You have to like you have to leave it for its history.
Listen, if Carmelo would have never left here, I mean, see, so in the practice gym, there's plaques on the wall with the records, each rebounds, assists.
He would
points,
have had a
whatever.
Lot of them.
He would have had almost every single one of them, and it just is. But just for what he just in terms of the winning, because they won a lot. They went to the playoffs every year. He was here. Yeah. I mean,
it's also good for everyone if they retire it. Like I realize Denver fans don't love him now.
I don't. Is that
I
true?
I kind of believe.
Is that true?
Am I making that up?
No.
Well, from Denver Stiffs, which it's a diehard, so it's a stiff. It's a very specific piece of
sure.
it. Love him. You know, it's kind of. It's not at all. Like there's no disdain or anything like that. It was kind of.
So
like,
I'll just go. I'll talk about the preseason game because we're prior to a game that people are going to be listening to this after. So Carmelo Anthony would get the ball and he was booed, still by some people in that
but
arena,
that's
and
though,
he.
Isn't it?
It's there are people who will never get over. See, they felt that he basically looked at Denver and said, "You're not New York. You're not a big city.
Accurate.
So see you later."
Yeah.
And they'll never get over that. Hmm. And there are some people who are kind of like pissed at the time, but kind of have gotten over it. I think there will always be a contingent of people who do not like Carmelo Anthony, and I don't think that matters, to be honest with you. It just doesn't, because it doesn't take away from what he accomplished here and what his impact on this organization has and will always be.
See, I think OKC should retire Durant, but like it's even more complicated with Durant because they're going to be raising that jersey, and like maybe even in 10 years, like they'll be raising that jersey and there's just going to be raucous boos. Like you can't do that if it's just so uncomfortable and socially strange. But at the same time, like what are you going to cut out like four Western Conference Finals? Like it's not the ignoring the history part to me. Like that's not even what it is, but it's just not crediting positive history in your organization.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Like it's about retiring a number is not about acknowledging history. It's about crediting it. Right.
Yeah.
And like you can't obviously Russ is going to be retired and you, I just don't think you can do that and not have Durant up there. Like it's weird either way. And I feel like Oklahoma City gets to a point where they're not as crazy about Durant as they are now. But like, Look, the difference here is like Melo also didn't rip the organization after he left.
Right.
Yeah.
That's a
Melo
big thing.
Melo didn't like just like destroy the coach and the organization, and he destroyed everyone except for Russ.
Yeah.
This is a long ways off, but Westbrook and KD going to be side by side in the rafters? Are they going to be like separate? Like it would almost be like a statement thing to be like, no, one over here, one over here.
Russ is very claustrophobic, so he might
have his own section.
He actually is very claustrophobic.
That's funny.
True story.
You guys
take a step back during national anthem to like brush shoulders with people. That's why they always do scrums. They can't do scrums around his locker.
Yeah.
When we talk to the media, we do it over by the whiteboard because he's very very anxious in crowds.
This is bizarre. Guys, you guys were awesome. This was as fun as I thought it would be. Thank you so much, both of you guys, for coming on.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Yeah, it was fun.
Everybody else will be back, of course, next week with more episodes.
Thanks for listening to the Locked On Nuggets podcast. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes and visit us on the web at denverstiffs.com.